The Cultural Council's mission is to nurture, promote, and support a healthy, diverse, and inclusive cultural sector so that the arts and culture are a part of everyday life for everyone. We invite listeners to discover Florida's cultural capital online at palmbeachesculture.com. Welcome to the Artie Gras Podcast, where we dive deep into all things art and culture in Palm Beach County. I'm your host, Sarah LaPierre, and I'm here today with not one, but two exciting guests. I am so glad to welcome these women from our local and nationally known museums. We have with us Rachel Gustafson from the Norton Museum of Art and Teresa Russo from the Boca Museum of Art. Ladies, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
I know we have a lot to discuss and dive into, and I'm very excited to get some behind-the-scenes talk of what goes into curating and educational programs in museums. But first, I would love to learn a little bit more about your individual backgrounds. So whoever wants to start, if you could give me just a little bit of career path and what position you're at today.
Sure. You can go ahead first.
Okay. I am at the in the education department with Claire Klum, who's the director of education. I'm the academic programs manager. How did I get here? Well, I have a PhD from the University of Toronto. I studied art and literature, medieval and Renaissance studies, and I taught there medieval studies, but also material culture and semiotics, which were courses that students who wanted to go to work in museums and become curators would take. But I also taught Dante and Chaucer literature and the art that developed from these powerful poems. And so that's what I did in Canada at the University of Toronto, Brock University, University of Guelph. And then I came here to work at the museum where I'm working in education, teaching K to 12, working with creating curriculum for K to 12, and then also with university. And I created teaching materials for elementary while I was in university with my students. So we would take a poem and create it for a fourth or fifth grade classroom. And so that's where the curriculum building for elementary and high school comes from.
Wow, what a beautiful, rich journey. I love that. It's incredible. Rachel, do you want to tell us a little bit about your background?
Sure. So again, I'm Rachel Gustafson. I'm the Chief Curatorial and Research Officer at the Norton Museum of Art. I've been there for almost 10 years now, which is kind of hard to believe. And I started off as like a very junior entry-level curatorial staff member. And with the support of many mentors, have been able to kind of lead the department. So what does that mean? It means I get to curate wonderful exhibitions, but I work with a big group of curators to realize their individual creative visions. At the Norton, we have 5 collecting areas. So we have a curator in charge of each of those collecting areas, whether that's contemporary art or photography. And then before coming to the Norton, I had like a really different kind of career. I was in public relations, political communications in Tallahassee, Florida. And did that for about 6 years before I decided, you know what, I really preferred art history. That's what I studied in undergrad. I went, and you know, 2008 was a weird year. People were choosing economic decisions over following their heart because what jobs were out there at the time. Sure. So I pivoted back into art in 2015, got my master's degree at American University in art history with a focus on contemporary art. And then worked at the National Museum for Women in the Art before coming to the Norton, I think in 2015. I really can't remember my years now, but It's been kind of, I will say there's never really one direct path into art, but if it's something that you love, you find your way in.
And find your way back in. Right?
You can boomerang.
So what are some of, in that position that you've been at for almost 10 years now, what are some of maybe the most significant projects that you've been able to be a part of?
That's a great question because I've worked on so many. Like recently I actually did like count up how many exhibitions I've like either supported or curated myself, and I'm getting close to 70 shows now, which is like
incredible.
an insane number. But one of the best ones that I remember is one that was like kind of more fully in my wheelhouse. I studied feminist art history at American University, and I got the opportunity to work on a show called For the Record, Celebrating Art by Women at the Norton. It was almost all from our collection, which was an amazing thing to see. But the art was important, but the real work came from counting our acquisitions. How good were we doing acquiring art by women compared to other national institutes? And we found we were about 10 percentage points ahead of national collecting standards, while also showing just amazing work by artists who happened to gender identify as women. So it was like a research-based show, but also very an aesthetically charming show. And that was, I think, in the summer of 21. So it wasn't so long ago.
Yeah, that's incredible. And that's affirming and exciting to hear that
we're doing some good work.
Yes, yeah. That women artists are being collected and sought after and brought into, you know, big venues that have national and international audiences.
Yeah, it was a very important show for the Norton. And I think it just showed that we've been doing this work for a long time. And it's something we'll continue to do with our Recognition of Art by Women series, which will be something we see in the future at the Norton. So more to come.
Okay,
on that.
Wonderful. Yeah. Nice. Okay, so Teresa, what about, I want to know what like a best day looks like for you in the educational department with the Boca Museum.
Well, in the mornings, I'm in the galleries lecturing. I'm talking to young people or college students. Today, for instance, we had the medical students from FAU first year, and we were looking at portraits and discussing bedside manners and who these people are, cultural differences, ethnic backgrounds, languages, the different people that they might meet in their career. So in the morning, I'm down there in the galleries. I love being with the young children as well. And then in the afternoon, sometimes I'm doing a virtual tour of the museum to schools where they have a hard time coming to Boca Raton Museum, maybe because of busing or distance. And working with the art teachers. We have a program at morning where I'll spend an hour, and the docents as well will spend an hour with students in the galleries, and then they'll go to the studio to create art that might reflect something that we saw that day with the students.
How excellent. That just sounds like a wonderful experience for people who get to come into the museum and see the art and then go reflect on it. Was there any moment today with the medical students that surprised you, or kind of somebody had a little insight?
Yes, we have a painting by Rivers, two women posing, and we don't reveal it at first. And they try to guess what they might see. And then there is this abstract work. One woman is unclothed. There's their faces are distorted a bit. And so they're discussing mental health and things like that. But they were very surprised because some thought of a photograph from the 1920 of two girlfriends together, et cetera. So
that's really fun.
So some of the pieces are surprising, but it gets them to think about, in this case, two women together, why the women were painted that way. They also had great insight in that three of the works were male artists projecting and representing women. So that was an interesting conversation that began. So I was really excited because they're young. And so they were really...
Right. They're the freshman class. They're students from FAU coming in, and they're coming in with physicians as well.
That's right. Yeah. They had the doctors were there as well, helping along with the discussions and talking about medical diagnosis.
Yeah. Wow. That's a huge part of being just such a like built-in fabric of the community that, you know, you're educating on all of these areas. This is kind of going to be a question for both of you. What is it like for these cultural hubs to, you know, be both drawing visitors and participants from community and from national audiences? How is that balance?
I mean, in terms of the balancing act, there's a part of me that says maybe there doesn't really need to be one. Mm. Because if you're programming well, you should be kind of appealing to both kinds of maybe outsiders, people that don't live here, as well as the community that you represent. And, you know, art is really for so many different kinds of people. So we do keep an eye at the Norton, at least on, I'm sure Boca does as well, about our immediate community who surrounds us. Will our exhibitions be relevant? They speak to that community, but hopefully every good exhibition will ask a good question. And that question, if you're doing it right, should be a universal one that can apply to everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Teresa, do you have any thoughts on
that? Yeah, I agree. I mean, a Boca Raton Museum, if you even look back in 1950 when they started, it started out as a women's art league. And they understood, even when Boca was just a small city, a small town, the need for art and culture in the community and to bring that to Boca Raton at such an early stage of the city's life. We talked about this off camera, but we are celebrating this 75th anniversary.
Yes, that's
and
right.
Look at the... You know, where we've come to, where something small and local and now having international exhibits drawing a crowd down here to South Florida. So I think, like you said, it should be talking to both our community and then the people that want to come visit, and not just to come visit and see the beaches and have a vacation, but then they can go and enjoy the culture of the community as well.
This is a place for art enthusiasts, right? So you mentioned the exhibits, and I want to talk to you both about this exhibit that's premiering. You're working with, I'm going to say this and get this right. Let's see. So you're working with the Hispanic Society Museum and Library, right? And the Boca Museum is premiering an exhibit. Is it 50 plus works, masterworks?
Yes, 57 masterworks by renowned artists from Spanish Baroque. So we'll have El Greco and Velázquez there. And I'm really impressed that the artists and what the curator did here is brought a collection that represents both men and women. This is really difficult to do from the Renaissance and Baroque period. And half of the works are the monarchs. So I'd say to everyone, the monarchs are coming to South Florida. And the other half are religious pieces. And I find it really interesting how the religious pieces are also looking at women, the lives of the saints, and not just the prominent men that were part of perhaps Jesus's mission, the apostles. You don't have just the Madonna and Child, but you have Saint Cecilia, you have Saint Lucy, Santa Teresa, who is very important to Spain. And these works also recall history, Roman history, early Roman history. So, and not just Spanish history of the moment, right? And what Baroque Spain is, a transformative time there for Spain. In the 1600s, actually, there was a plague. Spain is fighting France, but the artwork is showing the height of literature, art, and sculpture at that time. So it's really beautiful, large pieces that, and this is a theme that we often don't have here at Boca Raton Museum. And great piece to really kick off 75 years.
It's so exciting that this is premiering here. And this is a collaborative effort. Is that what we're calling it? Because you're also working with the same museum and library, right? And you're premiering Sorolla, is that right?
Sorolla, right.
Sorolla and the Sea, right?
It's another Spanish artist. So the great thing that we should probably point out about the Hispanic Society is they're this really wonderful institution in New York, and they don't often do these big lended shows. So what the Boca Museum and what the Norton is getting is really an opportunity for people in Florida to see artwork that they might not be able to see unless they could go to New York
City. Travel. Sure.
So it really is bringing part of all of Spain's culture and richness to South Florida, whereas people might not see it otherwise. I know for our part, Sorolla's work, and you're right, it's called Sorolla in the Sea. That's the name of the exhibition. This is the first time most of these paintings have left New York in over 100 years.
Wow.
So it's really just a kind of this one-time shot you got to see this beautiful man's work. So Sorolla, kind of to contextualize him a little bit, a lot later than what you see at the Boca Museum's art. This is the 19th century. Sorolla grew up in Valencia in Spain, and he loved to paint the seacoast around him. And so what you see through about 47 works, so closer to 50 paintings, all these seascapes and then life at the sea, what it looked like for the fishermen and the fishwives and people working on the shore, but also finding leisure at the shore and all these classes coming together at the beach, which is something that, you know, in South Florida we see all the time. And so you have this really lovely motif that we're used to, what the beach looks like. But for Sorolla, he's breaking a lot of ground here. He's very much of a modern era. So while you're seeing people at the shoreline, it's done in a very painterly way. very similar to this up here. Okay. I think if you were to actually look at some of the swirls of the water around some of the main figures in the painting, they are really, really modern. They really start feeling like the Impressionist moment. And even Claude Monet cites Soroya as really kind of one of the founders of painting light and water and what that all means. So it's a really interesting look at one particular artist, whereas Boca, you have many.
Right.
Yeah.
And the one connection I'd like to make is that he was 18 years old when he was at El Prado and saw the artist that will be at Boca Raton.
Oh, wow.
And then he was 25 years old when he was in Rome studying the classics and the Renaissance. So there is
some carryover.
Yes.
So it would be incredible for viewers to maybe come visit the Boca Museum, see these earlier works the influences, and then come into the Norton and see where those kind of inspired and led to later on.
I totally agree with that.
I can't wait to spend some time with, you know, with all of these pieces. Mm-hmm. Is there a little behind the curtain, behind the scenes of, you know, being a curator or prepping for an exhibit that you could share with us of maybe, you know, something that is unexpected that goes on?
I have a great one.
Okay.
So before the Norton actually is welcoming this show, we've had one of Soroya's largest canvases on view at the Norton. It's called Beaching the Boat.
It's a gorgeous piece.
It's taller than this room.
Yeah.
And in fact, it was so big when it first came to us, it had to come rolled in the canvas in a big giant crate, like as big as a minivan. And the frame came separately too. So when we installed this work of art, we couldn't move it through the galleries as you see it on the wall. We had to have it deconstructed and carry the canvas separate from the frame and construct it in the room in which viewers will see it. So it was so big, it wouldn't fit any other way. So I think what sometimes visitors forget is the logistics behind exhibitions. These paintings just don't go on the wall.
Right.
There's a lot of like, will this fit? And there's some like real brass tacks things you have to think through as a curator and as an exhibition preparator to just make sure, okay, this is the show. And is it going to be looking the best and interpreted the best for our viewers? So
yeah,
it's kind of a fun tidbit.
Is that going to be the largest work still?
Is.
I mean, that one's,
it's the hallmark. And the way people will experience this show, it'll be what curators call on the sight lines. It'll be the first thing you see as you walk in. And it, you know, that magnetic pull of these giant images is the hope that we'll have this like revealing moment for people.
Very exciting. So with preparation that the Boca Museum is doing, are there any upcoming special like artists in residence programs or educational programs happening around this Spanish-themed exhibit?
Yes, there is. There will be music and film. So we have Duane in the education department who's taking care of all that. There will be wine tasting with vineyards from Spain. And we also have a symposium at FAU with, if you want something a bit more academic, we will have an event with FAU discussing our history and discussing these pieces. And it will also, the exhibit will run into art gala as well that will be taking place in the new year.
So tell us now, this is, you know, a podcast that we hope is evergreen, right? And people can enjoy this episode at any time and learn something and get some insights from both of these institutions. But so the viewers who are watching first know, when are these exhibits happening?
Yes, so November 1st, November 7th to December 30th. We're still preparing that first week of November.
Of course.
Yes. Our celebration of 75th anniversary will start in the new year in 2025. And it's also, I have to mention, 100 years for...
It's the centennial.
City of Boca.
Boca, right.
Yes, so, our executive director, Urban Lipman, thought this would be a great collection to really celebrate the city as well because of the connections to Spain. The Historical Society talks about how even the naming of the city has connections to Spanish language. And so this is a great exhibit to really to kick this celebration.
The 75th and the 100th. That's wonderful. Yeah.
And at the Norton, Soroya and the Sea opens November 23rd.
Those dinner reservations and tea times will have to wait because there's an art-filled paradise beyond these beaches. A mecca of masterpieces. Spectacular sights by day and night. A cultural capital that's calling your name. See so much more than you came for in the Palm Beaches.
And it will run through the new year into March 16th, so through the spring. And then that Friday before the opening, we have our great Art After Dark. That's when the museum's open till 10 p.m. And all the people that have 9-to-5 jobs can come experience all the liveliness, whether that's through live music or lectures or presentations. And that Friday night will be all about Soroya, and we'll be hosting Spanish music. The director of the Hispanic Museum, Dr. Guillaume Kentz, will be there to give a lecture so people can come and hear him talk about Soroya. And then we'll also be doing, I think later in the season, it's not that night, but later in the season, we're working with the Palm Beach Opera, and they'll be presenting a kind of study on Soroya and present individual opera pieces or songs that kind of speak to that moment in art in Spain.
That's exciting too. So you mentioned Art After Dark. Can you tell us a little bit more about that
what that is? The funnest night of the museum every week. Yes, Art After Dark is wonderful. It's a program that's led by our learning and community engagement team. And every Friday night, no matter what time of the year it is, the museum is open late till 10 p.m. Our restaurant's open late, and you'll always have a pick of wonderful things to choose from. The first Friday of every month is our Jazz Friday, so it has a huge following, and you'll see just some of the best jazz acts, not just in Florida, but nationally come through the building. And then really, it's just a fun night. The energy is really exciting. There's a lot of families. There's a lot of young people. There's old people. It's this like kind of gathering moment where the whole community comes out. And to your community question before, I think that's how we do it.
Yeah, that's a big one.
It's just, it's this like neighborhood feel to it. And it happens, like I said, every week. So there's always something new. There's always something fun.
And you have artists come in, local artists,
artists,
who
speakers.
Kind of play with the themes that you're showing currently in exhibits or in other portions of the museum. And they'll do a little free workshop for people to actually create something
that's
at the museum. I think that's such a fun part of that.
Yeah, we engage with the local artists in two different ways during Art After Dark. Sometimes we do artist tours. So we'll work with the local artists like yourself and say, hey, we think your practice really looks like Soroya's practice. Would you want to come in and talk a little bit about what you see at the museum, what your favorite pieces are? And then the other way is through the demos. So we do these things called open studios where the classroom are open on the second floor. And people can make a work of art inspired by either that local artist practice or, again, by an exhibition or a work on view. And then we bring in national artists, too. We have Derek Adams coming this season. One of his paintings was recently acquired by the museum, and he's like one of the biggest names of contemporary art right now. So we go across the board. We want to hear living artists. We want to see the art, but we want to hear from the artists, too. That's really important.
And we also have on Thursdays evenings where we'll stay open late, and we have Meisner Park there too.
Yes.
So
mm-hmm.
many people will come.
Very walkable.
And, enjoy the art and then go get dinner. There's live music outside, but we also have music in the evenings on these Thursday evenings. We've had the film series as well.
Yes.
Those were very popular all through the summer. And we have the curators that are also engaging local artists, but as well national artists. I know our curators are in New York sometimes and different places across the country talking to artists and looking at artwork to try to bring in too. And we have an exhibit on the second floor where we place those artworks.
Okay.
Yeah, wonderful. For a few months, and then we bring new artists from around the country too.
So talking about, you know, working with the community, bringing all ages, seeing everybody in there, what's a way that you're really focusing on bringing art to the next generations? How are you attracting them into the museum and engaging them and making them a part of what you do?
Well, we're working on creating some online material so that when students come in and engage with the artwork, they can continue learning when they leave the classroom. And we're making a sort of conceptual, a few pieces right now that then we'll release to the public. We'll have some of our teachers start using in the classroom and getting some feedback. So these will be crossword puzzles that engage with our periods of art that we have there. We have ancient Americas, African art, as well as modern art and then international contemporary art. So we'll have a few games and, you know, name that painting for ages 5 to 7. I'm creating hotspots, one with Matisse, with the girl playing the piano, and children can learn the terms, the piano, girl, et cetera. So that's going to be a lot of fun. We're also going to bring in technology and some iPads that the students can use. These are students both in the educational morning, in the self-guided tours, or just guided tours without the studio part of the experience. Yeah, so we'll be having students using those technologies while they're in the museum as well.
Nice. And last time I actually visited Norton, I got to go upstairs and I saw where there was just
the student exhibitions,
artwork all over the walls. And it made my heart so happy. I was just delighted to see it.
Yeah.
Can you tell me more about how that ended up there?
I'd love to. I mean, it's one of the best. I feel like Elsie. So I'm in curatorial. And so part of our job is like interpreting and exhibiting the art. But I got to say, I think my colleagues in the learning and community engagement department have a much bigger impact because they do engage with these young students and young families. And upstairs in the Marden Gallery, that's what you're referencing, we show two exhibitions a year. One is with the students throughout the Palm Beach County school system. So it is our LCE department working with artists, like art teachers throughout the county, and introducing them to one of our exhibitions. Okay. And then those art teachers go to their classrooms and they encourage their students to make a work of art that could then be on view at the Norton inspired by that show. So last year we had a fashion exhibition that was all about photography.
Yes.
And then all those teachers went back to their photography classes and said, hey, we're gonna be on view at the Norton, make your best photo for fashion and modeling. His students came back with amazing examples. Now, not all of them are selected. There is a review process, and the best of the best are put on the walls. And then the other show that we do, which is what's on view right now, is our after-school arts outreach program. It's called AAO for short. And it's like the most meaningful thing we do. It's where our teaching artists, so we employ artists at the Norton, and they go out to different community centers and they work with the kids. They teach them art classes in a school system where art classes isn't always guaranteed.
Sure.
And gives them an opportunity to learn an art lesson. And again, that's usually inspired by something in our collection. Right now, that exhibition is inspired by Rose B. Simpson, Journeys in Clay. This is an indigenous artist out of New Mexico, and she's making these giant totemic clay figures. And the kids focused on the masks that she did.
Okay.
So the whole exhibition are these masks made by these students. And we represent 15 different sites throughout the community. I'm trying to think of like one good one. The Boys and Girls Club is a good example. We used to work with the Police Athletic League before they closed. The Mayan Center, someone is an entity that we work with. And so each of those 15 to 18 sites are represented in that show.
Wow.
And so that's really like an amazing thing. And then for just families, we do Family Studio, I believe, twice a month, where families can sign up and do art projects with their kids. Which is, I love that part. I can't wait to sign me and my daughter up for one. She's a little too young, but soon enough. Soon.
Yeah. Nice. We don't have a space right now to exhibit all the after school projects that we have. We have artists, teachers that go out to and work with students as far as Boynton and also Delray Beach. And we do have one project, Studio Science, where we'll have an art show at the end in the spring to showcase their work. So that's a lot of fun.
It's just so exciting to see those next generation pieces, right? Yeah. And especially what their reflection of the exhibit is, or of the work that they were shown. I love that. I love that that's a big part of what you guys do. So I wanted to ask outside, if we can go outside of the museums for a minute, can you give me one piece of public art, other institution, gallery, something that if you're telling somebody from, you know, outside or locally, Palm Beach County, you need to see this. You need to have this art experience.
Good question.
Where would you send them?
I'll give you two picks. Okay. I'll give you one outside of Florida.
Okay.
The first is this, like, it's hard to get to because it's in Long Island City, but it's the Noguchi Studio and Museum. Noguchi, Japanese American artist who made these like really abstracted sculptures, whether it's from like bronze or stone. And it is the most zen-like, perfect museum experience. Whenever anyone's going to New York, I'm like, if you got an extra subway ticket on your pocket, make your way to Noguchi because it is off the beaten path. In Florida, I got to give a shout out to the Perez Museum of Art in Miami. They just, as an architectural space, it's so inspiring. And then you go in and you see their collection, which is mostly contemporary art, but they're just doing really exciting projects. And I think their mission of connecting with the Caribbean South and making sure that they represent their community and the artwork that they show, I think they're really hitting the mark. So shout out to the Perez.
Love that. Oh, yeah.
That's beautiful. Yeah. Well, I have to make myself get out there. I haven't been down to the museums and galleries in Miami yet. So I'm looking forward to doing that. I'm looking forward to experiencing, and I think this is something that Palm Beach County offers that's really amazing, is the festival that will come on February 1st and 2nd. So as an experience of 150 artists there out in Meisner Park,
yes,
it's a great time for family, for the artists to showcase what they have. I hear that in the past 40,000 people have been out there throughout the weekend. Wow. So it's an amazing, I think, a big art party.
Yeah, it really is. It's a beautiful weekend for people to come experience. Yeah. And it's local artists, it's national artists. Yeah,
exactly. And there'll be, the education department will be putting something together for children, for family to enjoy. And so people of all ages and background will be able to enjoy something there. And then the food, the music that's there already in Meisner Park.
Okay, so talked about outside the museums, which I love. What do you hope is an experience that people take away from these upcoming exhibits? Mm-hmm. Teresa, do you want to start?
I think the artwork, first of all, does represent the history and culture of Spain. In particular, when you start seeing the architecture and the paintings of Baroque Spain, the palaces, you have the rich tapestries. There is the wedding at Cana. That's a really beautiful, rich piece that has the tapestry, the vessels that will remind you of the grandeur of Spain at this time. I also think that people should view the art and think about what's going to come next in art. After this period. And I say that because El Greco was in Rome, and he was there when Vasari said, where do we go now that Michelangelo achieved a divinity in art? And where they went was mannerism. And so what you'll start seeing is El Greco will be a little different from the other artists in this exhibit. And he will go there to mannerism, where you see the elongated body. We will have the famous Saint Jerome by El Greco there. I'm really excited to see it. And these are the pieces that will influence Picasso, Degas, Cezanne. When you look at Picasso, you'll see he has a conversation with El Greco throughout his life in his blue period. And then you have another strand of artists who will be inspired by Velázquez. You mentioned Monet. He was inspired by the academic style with the brushwork by Velázquez. And we will be having a portrait of a young girl. Well, you see that academic style, but he also does not finish the dress. And many art historians talk about how that will free Monet. And so think about where art goes after this. And then one of my favorites, you know, I haven't mentioned yet, the still life pieces. They're hyper-realistic still life pieces. These artists wanted a bird to come down and pick the grape off their canvas. They wanted to trick you, right? To deceive you. Well, where does that go? By 1929, you have Magritte, who talks about the treachery of images. And he has this piece of a pipe. And what's the title? This is not a pipe. So I kind of, when I look at the still life, I think of where it goes later, right? And the conversations that the artist must be having. This is where modern art will come from, I think, right? So I want people to go through and think about that. And then when you leave that exhibit, there are other pieces in our gallery where you can see that. There'll be a legacy exhibit where you'll see our Picassos, so you'll be able to reflect on that. There'll be a modern piece of Don Quixote on the second floor by Pacton. It's on extended loan. Well, that book, Don Quixote, was published in 1605 during this time of Baroque Spain. So some of the poetry and the writing and the art of that time period, you'll still see in modern contemporary art.
Oh, these are wonderful connections. I love it. This experience is going to just be such a full one. I can't wait.
And then at the Norton, I'd say the experience for people to take away when they're leaving Soroya in the Sea is looking at his technique, because he really is taking his palette and his paint and his canvases outside. He's painting in plein air or outside while he's doing a lot of these seascapes. And for a community that is basically on the beach, you know, in West Palm, we're just right across the intercoastal from the Atlantic coast. Just remembering to slow down, look around, use nature as a point of inspiration, whether that's in your daily life, physically or creatively or mentally, just taking some time to slow down and look, because this exhibition is really a feast for your eyes. Mm. So I'd encourage everyone to just take a beat, take a minute. There's a lot going on out there. Look closely, yeah. Look deeply. Yeah. And just enjoy where your feet are in the moment.
Yeah. And then if you think you've seen a lot of Madonnas and Childs, I take what you just said to really stop a moment. There's a piece by De Morales where when you look closely, he actually places the alignment of the stars when Jesus was born. Mm. And this was published by a philosopher in 1554. And so he takes that and he places it there. And then when you look down into the hands of this other figure that art historians haven't been able to identify, you see these eggs in a basket. And in Christian art, that sometimes represents the resurrection, fertility. It represents the tomb. And when you look even closer, Jesus is wrapped in a shroud. I've never seen an Italian art where baby Jesus is wrapped in a shroud. And that is what Jesus will be wrapped when he's buried in the tomb. So here you have this artist not just presenting the Madonna and Child, but giving you signs and symbols to the birth and death of Jesus. It's quite fascinating. So like you said, take the time to really look. And these artists left codes, right? They left signs in them that they were talking also to their audience too, right? So I think they're fabulous pieces in that way.
Wonderful. Okay, so I just have two quick questions left. And one of them if each of you could give a piece of advice to somebody who is looking to be in maybe a curatorial position in their future or in a place of education at an arts institution, what advice could you give?
I think from my perspective, I shared a little bit about my career path before, it's never too late to change gears. If something isn't fitting you right or doesn't fit who you think you are, what your value system is, it is never too late to make the switch. It's never too late to go back to school. And I think when your passion is in it, you're going to put in the long hours, kids. Mm. To be a curator, there's no question about it. You're working well over those 40 hours a week, but you're doing it because you can see the impact. Mm. And all of that makes the difference. And I will say, when you work for a museum, you're a public servant. And I think that's not spoken about a lot. But as much as a teacher or a firefighter is a public servant, so are curators and so are educators. We're out there making sure that the public has more to them, more access to things that they wouldn't have access to otherwise, and kind of, you know, giving it a playing field to be explored. So that would be my advice. Like, know that there's going to be a lot of work, but know that it's never too late to go on the path that you see for yourself.
That's an excellent perspective. That's wonderful.
I tell young people to perhaps also do some community outreach. Mm-hmm. I volunteered at the National Gallery of Art in D.C., I would walk by that Da Vinci every time I was there volunteering, because I knew all his work was in Europe, and here we had the one Da Vinci in the United States. And it was at that time when I was an undergraduate, I was actually in the social sciences, studying political science. And there was this one professor who always said to me, "You have to study the Divine Comedy with me. You're Italian." So finally, my junior year, I did. And I started backwards. I started with the Paradiso and not the Inferno. Loved it and switched to literature and art. So, take the maybe advice of professors who are asking you to explore the humanities, right? To explore the humanities, understand that they can provide professional development skills for you in the workplace. Empathy, but also written oral communication skills. And I would also advise them to look for those courses where they could work with digital humanities projects. A lot of museums will be going, I think, into that direction. There's ArcGIS story mapping that students can do in these classes. I offered some of those courses where you're not just writing an essay, where you can take literature and art and build projects from them that the community can use. So I advise maybe to explore different ways of sharing your knowledge to in your work, in your studies, when you're an undergraduate and a graduate student.
Yes, wonderful. Well, thank you so much for that advice. Last question. You're exiting through the gift shop. Yes. What are you buying?
Go ahead, Teresa.
Well, we just got these great scarves. I already went shopping.
I love it.
You're wearing it. Yeah.
So we've gotten the scarves already for our show. Mm. We're waiting for the jewelry. I'm waiting for the jewelry. So pashmina.
Very nice.
I bought a pashmina.
I love it. Yeah. What about you, Rachel?
I mean, I think I have a problem with books already, so I try not to buy more. But there really is such a wonderful book collection at the Norton store that's like more on our collection, too. There's some, I'll plug my own book. There's a book about the Oldenburg sculpture that's outside in front of the Norton Museum. There's like a 30-year history of that object within Oldenburg's oeuvre. So check that book out. I'd be happy to sign one for you. But more importantly, I would just say, you know, again, if you are finding yourself interested in art, there's a lot of good resources in books that'll just help contextualize things a little bit more. And then also taking that, the illustrations of these objects, being able to take them home with you and look at them even more deeply and more closely with that memory of the real thing in your mind. There's nothing better than that. You get to see it all the time.
Yeah.
To have the book.
Just continuously spending time with these art pieces.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
I love that. Yeah. I like it. Well, thank you both so much for being here today. I feel really lucky that you came on. Thank you for sharing your stories and those insights. I definitely look forward to these exhibits. And of course, you know, as a local, I'm just always happy to have such wonderful art institutions here that I can visit and I can tell people these are here for us. Like, go engage. There's so many ways you can get into these spaces and really just fall in love with the art more. So thank you again for being on the podcast.
Thank you for being an advocate for us. We really appreciate it.
Yeah. I'm going to do a little outro for the camera. So thank you to all of our listeners and viewers today for tuning in. I hope you hit the follow button, subscribe, don't miss an episode. Also want to say a huge thank you to our sponsor of the podcast, the Cultural Council for Palm Beach County. We appreciate you always. I hope to see you on the next episode. Bye, everybody.